do companies have a responsibility to provide employment for the disenfranchised? Matthew Smedley says, yes, they do, and doing so is good business. He goes on to say, society, not the economy, is the real marketplace. And smart companies realize that looking after people, all people, including those who have been marginalized, builds better societies and stronger economies. Smedley also says people who are currently outside of the workforce are there for a host of reasons that include seen and unseen diverse abilities. Many are eager to work, and they represent an untapped talent pool. Re-employment for many of them after extended absences from the rigors of work, he acknowledges, can be challenging. Mission Possible is a community-based organization that since 1992 has been providing people who have been unemployed with the skills needed to regain employment. Now, on the other side of the equation are employers who frequently are reluctant to create opportunities for people who need flexible work environments. Well, Mission Possible is there for them as well. We invited Matthew Smedley to join us for a conversation that matters about why hiring people with challenging lives and skill sets can benefit them, the companies they work for, and the community.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Untapped workforce. And is that a euphemism for people who have got some, what could be considered bigger challenges for employers to overcome?
Yeah, I mean, it's really just, it's people who are overlooked because of different circumstances that they are either experiencing currently or they have experienced. That idea of it being untapped is, you know, really kind of a group of people who are marginalized, people who may not quite fit the mold of what the kind of mainstream workforce considers employable, considers, you know, the ideal employees when they're out looking, trying to recruit for new staff, new employees.
So we're being nice in our terms here, but we're talking about people who may have substance abuse challenges, alcohol challenges, or have, in some cases, some significant mental health challenges. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
How then do we get those people? Because like my belief is that if you can give somebody an opportunity to feel as though they're a contributor to society, and that comes through work. I think it's fundamental in our society.
Absolutely.
Through work, we feel like we contribute. Mm-hmm. You give somebody that opportunity to feel like they contribute, they're going to benefit. So how do we get somebody who's been outside of that for a while aligned so that they can meet the needs of somebody who has been outside of the realm of hiring somebody like that?
Yeah.
Like, how do you pull those two together?
The way that we do it is creating an opportunity and welcoming people into it and giving them the support that they need to make that opportunity a reality. And so part of that looks like tailoring the opportunity so it fits the person and keeping it as a person-centered, you know, opportunity. Lots of communication, lots of support and coaching through that experience.
For who? The employer or the potential employee?
For both. For both, absolutely, yeah. I mean, within our organization, we run two small businesses. Mm-hmm. We started those for the purpose of creating jobs, for creating employment opportunities. And so we want to move people into that. And so we have staff who are supportive. We have staff who are, you know, who are trained, who are experienced in doing the work we're doing, but also alongside individuals who, you know, have barriers, have some challenges to, you know, less efficiency, you know, more training, more support needed. And then, absolutely supporting the workers as well.
So what is Mission Possible?
Mission Possible is a charitable organization in Vancouver's downtown east side. And we've been around for about 30 years. And what we talk about is creating empowerment through opportunity. And so seeing people move into an opportunity that we can create and see themselves become empowered to change their own lives, to feel, you know, that sense of dignity and self-worth that comes through contributing, that comes through a job. And there's so many, you know, there's tangible benefits, but there's so many intangibles, you know, just the sense of pride, the sense of dignity, the connections that they make as they're working alongside people, the confidence that grows through that job. And you can really just see this momentum build and people start on a trajectory that really moves their lives forward.
So Mission Possible has a couple of operating businesses.
We do, yeah.
What are those?
So one is an exterior property cleaning company called MP Maintenance. Mm-hmm. And that one, we do exterior property cleaning, everything from picking up litter off the streets to doing pressure washing, graffiti removal, window cleaning, exterior property cleaning for primarily commercial customers.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is called MP Neighbors, and that's a community watch program that we run that allows individuals from the community to look after the safety, look after the cleanliness, and the atmosphere of the community, and that operates in the heart of the downtown east side in the Hastings Crossing neighborhood.
You're also associated with an eatery. I don't know whether or not you call it a diner or a restaurant, but a potluck, correct?
Yeah, potluck is another, I mean, very similar in what potluck does. We're both employment-based social enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
So really actively, you know, creating businesses to employ people who aren't able to, you know, easily move into the workforce, are often overlooked and, you know, due to sense of stigma or just marginalization they're experiencing.
Why is it important that we embrace this kind of support, especially at this time in the workforce?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there a unique opportunity? Because you talk about being, you know, around for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
but I notice your profile's going up.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that we focus more on this now than we may have in the past?
Yeah, I mean, for this, it's really about being solutions focused. I mean, there's the, you know, the kind of the mantra of give a man a fish, you know, feed him for the day, teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't think of ourselves as teaching people to fish. People know how to fish. They just need the right access and the right opportunity
mm-hmm.
to fish.
And right.
So we're trying to allow that to happen, create opportunities for that to happen. Because we believe that people have abilities, we know that people have abilities, they have gifts and talents that they want to offer. One thing that the Downtown East Side has is limited number of opportunities for them to engage in that. And so
very limited number.
Yeah. And so, you know, for us, we want to continue to create more and more of these. We've seen hundreds of people come in a year. Just this last year, we had 85 people who we were able to employ in our businesses. We want to double that in the next 3 years. But, you know, that still leaves hundreds of people who are eligible for work, who want to work,
mm-hmm.
If the right opportunity is there.
So you say you've employed 85 people and you want to double it. What is it going to take for you to be able to double it?
We're growing the opportunities that we have. So we want to just continue to grow the businesses that are currently operating.
Mm-hmm.
But we are actively pursuing a third business as well that
mm-hmm.
would, you know, that would create more job opportunities.
One of the first things that I guess that you're doing is you're helping people learn how to work again.
Absolutely.
Because if you're outside of the workforce.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole mindset that happens when you you're in the ecosystem of the Downtown East Side.
Yeah.
There's so much dependence there on the support system to support you.
Yeah.
There's rhythms that come with that. There's habits that come with that. There's ways of thinking that come with that. When somebody moves back into the work culture and you know, have these different expectations on you that you don't have when you aren't working, there's a real shift that you have to make just in your own thinking.
Yeah.
And so for us, we start out with some workshops that just kind of lay the foundation for people when they're kind of thinking about moving into work and what those expectations look like. What does it look like to be professional? What does it look like to, you know, have good teamwork and those kinds of things? Those are really groundwork that's there, that's foundational to see success
mm-hmm.
in the employment that people move into.
I think it's probably also important to mention that people who've been outside of the workforce aren't necessarily there just because they've had a substance abuse challenge
mm-hmm.
or been involved in some sort of criminal activity. There's a whole host of reasons why people find themselves in that kind of position.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it can be anything from, you know, physical injury, job loss,
mm-hmm.
It could be family breakdown, you know, whole host of reasons. And, you know, there's often that kind of stigma that comes with the Downtown East Side, because what you see on the streets is often kind of street disorder that's really related to the drug trade,
mm-hmm.
And things like that. And so that's the picture people have of who's living in the Downtown East Side. the reality is there's 20,000 people in the downtown east side, and mm-hmm. half of those are living in poverty. There's roughly mm-hmm. 7,000 people who are persons with a disability,
right?
Which doesn't mean they can't work. It just means that they may not be able to work a full-time job and need some additional supports, but are, you know, could be a great addition to the workforce.
Well, you touched on an interesting point there. I had done a interview a couple of years ago with a representative from Poverty Canada, and they were talking about what the cost to society is when people are living below the poverty level. You think, oh, well, it costs that individual. But no, it costs society as a whole mm-hmm. a tremendous amount mm-hmm. of money to support someone, which it doesn't look like it, but it costs society a lot of money.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there was a study that was done by Atira, who they operate housing in the downtown east side, and they mm-hmm. employ lots of folks who live in the downtown east side to work in their buildings. And they did a study, and you know, through the course of this study, showed that for every dollar that they paid someone working in their social enterprise, there was a $4.13 return, mm-hmm. Social return within the community, with a reduction of you know, emergency services, reduction of support services required, and all those kinds of things when you're able to pay someone in a supportive work environment and see them, you know, working and employed. It totally changes the whole fabric of the community, not just that person's mm-hmm. situation.
You know, I'm constantly sort of go back in my own mind when I look at people who have challenges and they're being denied access to the opportunities that will allow them to realize their potential. Mm-hmm. Aristotle, some 2,000 some odd years ago, said, you know, the greatest loss to society is when an individual can't realize their potential. Mm. Mm-hmm. Not what I think their potential is, but just what their potential is.
Right.
And so we all lose out mm-hmm. when someone does not have an access to opportunity that's yeah. going to allow them to realize that opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah, and sometimes those opportunities are not paid. Sometimes yes. they're volunteer opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And people, there's lots of those that happen in the downtown east side. And we have done our share of that work as well.
Mm-hmm.
But those who are coming to us are really, they're not coming for a volunteer opportunity. They're coming because they want to earn money. You know, they want to have their own quality of life improved. They want to have more access to better food, better housing, you know, and feel like they are included in the economy. And so that's really what we are pushing towards.
You get an employer, let's say, who's watching this, goes, yeah, nice idea.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me you want me to hire one of these people. How do I prepare for that in a way that gives me a level of comfort that, you know, I'm investing in somebody who's going to grow and develop as a human being, and my company will benefit as a result?
Yeah. So this past year, we've been working with 16 other organizations to mm-hmm. create a guidebook to help employers do just that. So the guidebook is Untapped Talent.
Yes.
And it's that, you know, this business-to-business guide. And, you know, it's available online. And it's, you know, something everybody can share, you know, get some momentum, you know, let other people know about it. So untappedtalent.info is where it can be found.
Mm-hmm.
The thing to talk to people about, there's always kind of two sides to it. There's the you know, the kind of the employment needs that you can actually meet if you can, you know, find a way to bring on someone who you may not have, who may not, their resume may not rise to the top of your stack, so to
yeah.
speak. But think about the way that you're employing people a little bit differently,
mm-hmm.
And that it may not require a full-time job. You know,
yes.
you may be able to hire someone on a part-time or half-time basis. And that gives people the flexibility that they need. You know, we've got folks who love to work. They want to work a lot, but they can only work every other day because they work a full day. And then they need, you know, half a day just to recover from that, you
mm-hmm.
know, because they physically aren't able to keep up. And so it's really tailoring it to meet the needs of the individual, whatever those can be. And so flexibility is a huge one there for lots of folks. And flexibility is one of those things where, you know, it can be kind of scary to an employer. Oh, I can't be flexible. You know what I mean? I don't have time.
Yeah.
I need dependability, right?
Right.
But flexibility doesn't mean that people aren't dependable. It mm-hmm. means that you've worked out when they will come and
yeah.
you've think through availability and what your needs are. And if it's a fit, then that's fantastic.
How do I make it work so that it works for somebody on a longer,
For sure,
term.
Yeah, for us, we offer coaching to employers who will hire our graduates.
I was talking to an associate of mine who said that she had actually done this kind of work in helping people get these kinds of jobs. And at times, it meant going back and making sure that, well, don't fire this person because of that. I've talked to them. I'm coaching them through. I'm here to help. Are you there? Do you play that role as well where you say, yes, we helped you, you know, recruit this person. And if you run into some challenges, you can come back and you can lean on us as well.
Absolutely.
Because I think that is an important point for somebody who's going, okay, this now goes outside of the boundaries of my understanding about what employer-employee relations are about.
It does. It changes it.
Yeah.
For sure. For us, we want to continue to offer that. We don't have an end date on when we're no longer willing to support people.
You know,
we exist to make this this happen and help support individuals to, you know, be successful and move forward in their lives. And that's just a part of it. And so at times we've had conversations where, you know, we go and we support the employer, we support the individual, and at the end of the day, the relationship isn't going to, you know, the job itself isn't going to work out. And so what we try to do is continue to support that employee so that we can help find another opportunity, help them, you know, find a new opportunity for themselves that works.
Yeah.
But also we don't want the employer, if one opportunity doesn't work out, to shut the door. We want to continue to support those employers to make sure that, you can try this again, and let's find an individual with a different skill set or a different availability or, you know, whatever the case may be.
You know, you talked a little bit about companies being more efficient, but from a customer relations perspective or the way that a business interacts with society as a whole, how important is it that you have this kind of social responsibility to people? Not, you know, some people go, oh yeah, you should be focused on the environment, you know, paying attention to that. But here we're talking about people. Isn't that really what the true social benefit is of saying, I have a conscious willingness to make a difference?
Like, absolutely.
To reach out to people.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I mean, just the consumer habits show that people who do shopping, who purchase whatever it is, whether they're, you know, purchasing services or goods, that those there's, you know, at least 90% of people will favor, you know, those types of businesses. And, you know, over 70%, I think it's 74% maybe, will consciously choose companies who are, you know, doing those, that consumer or the corporate social responsibility it looks different in different ways, but certainly the social one is the awareness of it that has grown over the last decade has been amazing. And I think there's just there's been a real change in the younger generation being from the, you know, just through the school system to be more empathetic, to be more aware of social issues, much more so than I was, you know, when I was going through school. And that's really just ingrained in their values. And so they will purchase from companies who share their values.
So I'm driven by my own greedy self-interest that a lot of people would think of employers going, well, you know, is this just a feel-good kind of thing, or is there actually some sort of economic benefit out of this? I look at SAP, and I can bring them up and talk about them because they have an employment program that's dedicated to hiring 1% of the workforce, people who are on the autism spectrum. And Kirsten Sutton, who was running their office, and she may still be here in Vancouver at the time that I did the interview with her, I asked her, I said, is this a feel-good thing? And she goes, oh, no. Oh, no, absolutely not. It is, you know, there is a social responsibility, but there are true payoffs, and they come to you in ways that you can't even begin to expect because you get to see the world through a different lens, and you pick up on things that you completely missed. And she says, we've had extraordinary results as a result of the people that we've hired who are part of this program, but who are part of our entire workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm sounding like I'm really on side with you.
Well, I'm glad.
I'm supposed to go.
So I don't have to convince you.
Prove to me that this is a good idea.
Yeah.
Because I think it is. You get to see the world differently and identify opportunities that you wouldn't otherwise recognize.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, when we talk about diverse abilities, people have real strengths that others don't have. And mm-hmm. so if you're able to draw on those, lean on those, it can be a real game changer for your business when you've got that kind of talent on board. For me as a father, who I've got a son who has autism, just thinking about what work will look like for him when mm-hmm. he's an adult, I'm thrilled to see, you know, companies taking those steps, creating new opportunities and including people who are otherwise excluded. One of the things that I feel right now is a year or so ago had just a professional development session. And the purpose of it was really talking about generations and the changes in the workforce. You know, in the next 5 years, the millennials will make up 75% of the workforce. And so as a Gen Xer, I'm like, you know, right in that kind of small portion of the population. For just thinking about the values and the values change that's happening with that as millennials who are being, you know, raised in this, just an age of different values where they're being, at much younger age aware. And that's really going to be a shift that all employers have to make, is what I would say. There's, if you aren't making those steps, if you're not inclusive, you're going to be left behind, ultimately.
Yes. Most importantly to me, though, is that you're making differences in people's
Absolutely.
Lives.
Absolutely.
Well, I applaud you for what you're doing and hope that people who watch this will want to reach out and provide support for you. And I think even more importantly, provide employment opportunities for the people that you're helping to get to the hiring door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I hope they do reach out, and we've got talented folks who make great employees who we will be very sad to see leave our workforce, but know that they'll be benefiting somebody else and will continue their employment journey and their own life journey forward towards stability.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.